Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Ukraine is on a losing streak. It just can't get a break. Its counteroffensive is an utter catastrophe. Its reputation for gross mismanagement and corruption is on display. There is Zelensky fatigue, and now the Gaza war. The West gambled and lost. Time to end this conflict. Crosstalking Ukraine, I'm joined by my guest, Larry Johnson, in Tampa. He is a managing partner at Berg Associates, a former CIA analyst and U.S. State Department counterterrorism official. In Miami, we have Nicholas Davies. He is co-author of War in Ukraine, Making Sense of a Senseless Conflict. And here in Moscow, we cross to Dmitry Babich. He is a political analyst and editor at InnoSmi Internet Media Project. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want. Let me go to Larry first here. I mean, things are going pretty bad for Ukraine. I don't even know where to begin. I hinted towards it in my introduction. Where would you begin, Larry?
When Penny Pritzker, the newly appointed envoy by Joe Biden to handle Ukrainian affairs, shows up and basically tells Zelensky, can you get along without any money from us? That's a clear sign that things are not going well. They're already starting to appear videos on Telegram with pensioners in Ukraine yelling and being quite upset because they're not getting paid. So there is no single point of light for Ukraine, and this is sort of ironic, or it's symbolic, as that part of the world descends into winter and darkness. Ukraine is headed into great darkness.
Yeah, well, Nicholas, I don't like to use the phrase "I told you so," but those of us that are serious about following this conflict predicted this almost to the T. I mean, this was the way it was going to work out. But the problem is, so many people have died in the process, and Ukraine, as a functioning civil society, is teetering right now. And you hear all of these kind of voices in the background. No one wants to be the first to say, well, something has to be done about it. You know, you can go through, you know, even the mainstream media, and there are whispers and rumors and innuendos about, you know, what needs to be done, because everyone knows it's an utter catastrophe and failure. Nicholas.
Yes, and the catastrophe is really the direct result of the British and American decision in March and April of 2022 to kill the peace talks, kill the neutrality agreement. And while now we are hearing a lot of voices in the US and in the West who are ready to make territorial concessions, what we're not hearing from leaders in the West is the recognition that a neutrality agreement is what is needed for Ukraine. As Zelensky said on March the 27th last year, to as quickly as possible restore peace in our native land. And that's, of course, what Boris Johnson went to Kiev and talked him out of. So there needs to be the recognition from Western leaders that that neutrality agreement or some form of neutrality for Ukraine is the key to a lasting, stable resolution of this conflict. And I don't see that happening yet.
Yeah, and Nicholas, to add on to it, let's remind our viewers, Zelensky, at the exact moment that you mentioned there, he was asking to give up what he did not even have. He didn't have Crimea, and he didn't have the Donbass. Now he has lost so much more. So at that point, he was asked to give up something that he didn't have. That was not as hard as it seemed. Dima, let me read you some headlines here. Top Zelensky aide questions Ukraine's survival. Another one. Ukraine must brace for the loss of U.S. support. I mean, this is coming out of Kiev. I mean, these are not, Republicans saying they're going to cut off the funding. I mean, this is the client state saying, you know, you led us down this path. Now what? Dima.
Well, yes. Basically, we had these several scandalous articles. There was the head of Ukrainian armed forces, Zaluzhny, Valery Zaluzhny, who said that the Ukrainian forces and the Russian forces were in a deadlock, that there was no victory in sight, that people were just dying for nothing. Then there was a report from Simon Schuster, you know, which described the atmosphere around Zelensky as very much the atmosphere around Adolf Hitler during his last months in the imperial chancellery, in his bunker. So basically, even the Western media are starting to raise alarms that something is wrong, that they expected victory, you know, from that so-called counteroffensive, that victory will never come. And then we had this depressing article from President Biden a few days ago, published in the Washington Post, where actually he was not, he did not write a single word about compromise. He kept comparing Russia to Hamas, which is absurd and which is simply counterproductive. And he kept saying that investing money, and I'm sorry, people, in the war in Ukraine and in the war in Gaza was, I quote, a good investment.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just terrible and senseless, and it only strengthens the resolve of Russians to win. All of this pressure, you know, the banishment of Russian athletes from the Olympic Games, the prohibition, you know, basically we are prohibited to hold our own games. You know, the WADA and other organizations are saying they're going to punish the athletes who will come to Moscow. So all of that just convinces the Russians that there is no other way. We must win, because if we lose, we're done. I mean, we will not be treated as human beings anymore.
Yeah, well, you know, Larry, I don't think Joe Biden knows the difference between Hamas and hummus, but that's not the topic of the program. Larry, you know, one of the most important misunderstandings and false narratives that we've had all about this conflict, it's about territory. It's not about territory at all. Yeah. If we go back to the very beginning, denazification, that means the regime in Kyiv and its satellite figures must go. This ultra-nationalism must go. I mean, in the news cycle, we had a Ukrainian official saying, you know, Russians are not even a minority. They don't exist in Ukraine, okay? That's very much like what we hear about what the Israelis have to say about Palestinians. Again, another topic. The second one was demilitarization. And that's what's happening. What is really remarkable, gentlemen, over the last couple of days or so, we had officials in Kiev say there was never a counteroffensive. What are you talking about? It's still to come. I mean, this is a kind of delusion that they're living in, Larry.
I have never seen this kind of disconnect from reality among people who are actually, you know, they're educated and experienced people. Richard Haass, good Lord, he's been around for 40 years, going back to the 1980s. He was sort of a protege of Henry Kissinger, and he writes with Charles Kupchan, a piece in Foreign Affairs, that is so out of touch with, on the one hand, they admit what's going on, taking place on the ground in Ukraine, that Ukraine is losing, that Ukraine hasn't made progress. And yet they then turn around and pretend that Ukraine still has a chance. It doesn't. It's gone. It's over. It's like that scene from the movie Dumb and Dumber, where Jim Carrey is asking this woman who's already rejected him and said, "No, there, you know, basically, no way I'm going out with you." And he goes, "So there's still a chance." Yeah, there's no chance.
I really like the Dumb Dumber, because I think that really I always kind of look for those analogies, but it's perfect. Because I'm sorry, keep going, Larry.
Well, no, I was just going to say, in fact, the guys from Dumb and Dumber are smarter than these policymakers that we see in the West. They continue to, as you said, they focus on this notion that, Russia lost territory, completely ignoring the fact that when Russia withdrew its tank and columns from north of Kyiv on April 1st, starting on April 1st, and began that withdrawal, that was always presented in the West as a Russian defeat, but we now know that that was a goodwill, good faith gesture by Putin in order to say, okay, we're serious about this peace negotiation, and that the United States and NATO were the principal saboteurs in that process of destroying that peace process.
Yeah, Nicholas, the problem is, the overarching problem is that the West NATO world has never recognized that Russia has any legitimate security interests.
Yeah, I mean, and this is why they are now starting to aim for a frozen conflict drawing new lines on the map through Ukraine, but not actually resolving the underlying conflict. They want to have another roll of the dice at a later date, and so they're willing to negotiate some sort of ceasefire and some sort of territorial settlement that, like all these other frozen conflicts around the world, and of course, once again, back to Palestine as the most horrific one we're seeing right now. but that's when you look at Haas and Kupchan, who are saying what the two of them have been saying all along. Essentially, this is they are accepting the neocons' control over U.S. foreign policy. They know that Victoria Nuland and Antony Blinken.
Well, Nicholas, let me jump here because we have to go to our break. But we'll give the Russians an off ramp. That's how they do it. It's hilarious. Okay, gentlemen, I have to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the situation in Ukraine. Okay, let's go back to Dima here in Moscow. As these ridiculous narratives, first there was no counteroffensive. It's a stalemate. No, it's not a stalemate. When these people say it, it just makes the rounds. It really is very irritating here. But Dima, one of the problems is here is that why would Russia be in a rush? Because everybody says Putin is thinking this, the Kremlin thinks this. They have no idea what they're thinking. I always find it hilarious. Fiona Hill on the BBC, Putin is thinking this. And I have no idea how they know these things, okay? The Russians aren't in a rush for good reasons. Dima.
Yes, and the Western media contradicts itself. On the one hand, they write that Russia chose the war of attrition, that basically Ukraine is running out of resources unless we help. There is that sense of urgency. We need to help as soon as possible. Otherwise, the Ukrainian front will collapse. And on the other hand, they say, Putin is not delivering what he promised to deliver. Suddenly, they say that Putin will have some of the media say that Putin will have to hurry up because he has elections before him. Just a few months ago and all these years, they said that elections in Russia made no sense. So there is a lot of contradiction in what we hear from the West. But the reality is indeed that Russia in the long run is stronger. And there is absolutely no way you can deny this. And also, Crimeans, all 2 million of them, and people of Donbas, all 3 million of them, they will never, never agree to live again under the Ukrainian government. The Ukrainian troops, if they ever, ever try to enter this territory, will meet real guerrilla resistance, not the kind of guerrilla resistance that was promised to us by the Western media and that never realized. I mean, the Ukrainian army turned out much stronger than the West expected, but there was no real grassroots guerrilla movement, which was promised by the Western media. And indeed, in terms of resources, suddenly it turned out that the world is not so much determined by the Western economies. You have other economies. You can sell oil not only to the European Union, and not only to Japan. You can sell it to India. You can sell it to China, you know. Basically, countries of BRICS are getting more and more of importance. Their GDP is already exceeding the GDP of the G7. So there was a lot of things that the West did not include in its calculations when they provoked Russia into this war. And we can see it right now that Putin indeed had plan A and plan B. And certainly Putin is not thinking what Fiona Hill and Mr. Kupchan expect him to do, you know. They met him many times at Valdai Discussion Club. Putin tried to talk to them honestly, you know. I think he was very sincere and honest. He talked to them for hours, allowing any sorts of questions. That's not what dictators do.
Dima, didn't you notice that at those confabs, that was, you know, when these journalists and so-called analysts stand up, they're more interested in hearing their own voice and their own question. They never listen to the answer, okay? That's the way they're wired. Larry, what I'm looking at more carefully than all of this rubbish that is constantly being written that makes less and less sense, as Dima's pointed out, as all three of you have pointed out, is that a political collapse within Kyiv. I mean, it's so interesting when you see The Economist and Time magazine or, you know, other European publications. They're kind of like picking winners. Have you noticed that? Zaluzhny, keep Zelensky. I mean, this is kind of inside baseball stuff. Could be a lot of smoke, but it's kind of interesting. Larry.
Well, there's a little bit of psychological projection going on with the West in terms of predicting the collapse of Putin, because what we're seeing in the United States politically is a great division and a lack of consensus that the one candidate that seems to have the most support, Donald Trump, is the one that's the most vilified by the establishment.
Yep.
And the thing I hope that the Russian listeners and the Russian people understand one thing about what's going on in the United States right now. There is nobody in any position of authority or influence that can stand up and talk about we need to reestablish normal relations with Russia. We need to recognize that Vladimir Putin is a genuine leader and somebody we're going to have to deal with. Any politician that attempts that is immediately tarred as some, you know, puppet of Putin, some sellout to the communists. I mean, there's still so many Americans who continue to believe that Russia today is the Soviet Union of yesterday.
Yeah,
they, absolutely no comprehension.
Well, Larry, if you say something like that, eventually you'll be called an anti-Semite and a racist. Okay, those are the default positions. Okay, no matter what you say, and the establishment disagrees with you, you're either an anti-Semite or a racist. Okay, and of course they hate Donald Trump so much he must be both, even though his daughter converted to Judaism. But you know, those are details here. You know, Nicholas. One of the things that, you know, really bother me, like from responsible statecraft and all of that, you know, the very well-funded places, you know, when you distill it all down, they said it in the first week after the conflict started, but they won't use the term exactly, but what they want is Minsk 3. We need Minsk 3. That's what they keep, they distill it always down to that. Well, that is, well, if Minsk 1 and 2 didn't work, why would Minsk 3 work? Nicholas.
Yeah, it's we surely have gone past that. I mean, the basis of Minsk II, which did bring relative peace an end to the worst fighting of 2014 and 2015, with at least 14,000 people killed. But yes, Ukraine completely failed to fulfill the political aspects of that agreement. In other words, to grant autonomy to Luhansk and Donetsk. And so now, yes, Luhansk and Donetsk are gone. They are independent or part of Russia. So, so yes, I don't think that is revivable. But going back to March 2022, Ukraine and Russia were able to sit around a table in Turkey and reach an agreement that they both could live with. And this is obviously what needs to happen again, but there needs to be a realism on all sides. And as long as the West is effectively forming the strategy for Ukraine, and Ukraine is acting as a puppet of NATO and the United States, then they are still not going to be allowed to negotiate a viable, stable agreement. And so the shift that needs to happen is a shift in the United States, you know, kind of as Larry is suggesting, that the Biden administration, under the grip of the neocons who have led the United States into a dead end all over the world since the 1990s, there needs to be a return to serious diplomatic relations with every country in the world, including China and Russia, so that we can actually solve the real problems that we're all facing in this world.
Yeah, but I agree 100%, Nicholas, but that would compromise hegemony. That would compromise the supremacy of NATO. They're not going to let either one go, Dima. Supremacy, NATO's writ around the world now, it's out of area ambitions. What has to happen is a catastrophe. And I don't say that lightly, because a catastrophe means a lot of people die, Dima.
Well, that's true, and I completely agree with Nicholas. I call what he just described, I call it a wrong radical ideology. The ideology of the modern West needs to change, because this is a radical ideology which rejects compromise, which rejects any kind of diplomacy, actually. Look, recently a German magazine called the German foreign minister, Annalena Baerbock, the undiplomatin, the opposite of what a diplomat should be. Because look what she is doing, and look what Biden is doing, you know. They're calling respected leaders of other countries dictators. Yeah. Sometimes they do it before the negotiation, sometimes immediately after the negotiation. They breach tested old rules of diplomacy. Even rules of common decency, you know, that you don't insult your opponent, that you don't teach your opponent, you don't lecture him or her. This is the reason why diplomats always wear ties and dull suits, you know. They almost never wear uniforms, because the aim is to make a distinction between the person and the function. We are not talking during the diplomatic talks. People are not talking about ideology. They're not teaching each other. They resolve the problem.
Yeah, but it gets...
And the West is now unable.
Let me finish off with Larry here. It's kind of like the State Department coming out. We're not going to judge Israel we're not going to be the judge, jury, and executioner if Israel is breaking international law. Is Hamas? Oh, of course they are. Okay, that's exactly what Dima is getting at. That's exactly what Dima, because this inability to think differently. Last 30 seconds. Go ahead, Larry.
The art of diplomacy is telling a mother that her child is ugly and she thanks you at the end. So being able to have that kind of skill. But what the United States has turned into, our approach is either sanctions or war. We can't do both.
Well, that's something they have to wake up to. And like I said, I didn't want to say it lightly, but the way the train is leaving, going on course, a catastrophe is impending, unfortunately for all of us. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Tampa, Miami, and here in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time, and remember, Crosstalk Rules.